Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go on a Monday, live in Los Angeles. It's the Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening. iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, FS1, 1 hour from now. Where Colin was right, where Colin was wrong. A little over an hour from now, Devontae Adams, superstar wide receiver. He is an all-timer for the Green Bay Packers, stops by. Joy Taylor's out today, and Alex Curry stepping in again after a wild Angel-Dodger weekend series in which the Angels got the better of the Dodgers these days. Who doesn't?
I think everyone does, but I mean, it's not often you see 36 runs in two games. It was wild. It was a wild first two games and then an easy 2-1 win yesterday.
Big fight in the stands on Friday.
That was not the only fight. There was a fight at our pre- and post-game set behind me after the game. You say one thing, those fans are going at it.
Well, let's start here on a Monday. So yesterday afternoon on Mother's Day, happy Mother's Day to everybody out there, I made it a point. I wanted to watch the Knicks versus the Clippers. And I've said this before. You know, most NBA regular season games, most Major League Baseball regular season games, most NHL regular season games, they don't matter a ton, but you do get the occasional late season series or late season game that matters. And there's a handful of NBA regular season games that I'll, you know, circle and go, I want to watch that one. And this was an interesting one. The New York Knicks, kind of a directionless mess forever, have a basketball team everybody now likes. It's a band of overachievers. And they were on a West Coast road swing, fifth West Coast game, so they're kind of weary and tired. And you had the well-rested Clippers. Everybody was playing that mattered. Kawhi and Paul George, they had 2 days off. So my feeling was going into the game is, you're going to have a Clippers team rested with a bunch of energy, national TV game. But I think, you know, the Knicks will fight for a while, but they're tired. Nope, that's not what happened. Nope, the Knicks fell behind 10-1. Were often behind and just kept fighting and fighting and outworked and outplayed and outdefended the Clippers in Los Angeles and won. And Julius Randle didn't play particularly great. This was about Reggie Bullock. This was about defense. This was about Derrick Rose. And I got to tell you, two things jumped out to me. First time in 25 years, the Knicks have a future because they have a direction. Okay, it's not just, hey, we got a bunch of cap space. Hey, we're going to land this glamorous free agent. Yeah, that never happens. This is actually a real team, a band of overachievers. They play real defense. They play really hard. There's about seven guys that can give them somewhere between 12 and 18 points a night. They have an excellent head coach. And that's the second thing, is that they are not a championship team this year and maybe not next year. They're not. Expectations. Be realistic. This is what hurts organizations that aren't winning for a long time, they get unrealistic. Cleveland Brown fans are like, Super Bowl or bust. Cleveland's probably not going to win a Super Bowl. In fact, I'm going to go with they're not. But they're a playoff team. They can win playoff games. The Knicks are a playoff team. They can win a playoff series. But they don't have enough offense on a nightly basis to be a championship team. Also, one of the great advantages of the Knicks is they play their ass off. They play hard. That wins a lot of games in the regular season. But everybody in the playoff plays hard. And so that equals out, and you need talent. Brooklyn's going to play hard in the playoffs. Lakers going to play hard in the playoffs. These star-studded teams, they take nights off. They're not energized. I mean, they call Rajon Rondo playoff Rondo. He plays hard when the lights are on. But it doesn't matter to me because the Knicks now have a direction. It's so much easier in life to get somewhere when you actually point to something and you're going somewhere. And it's not just that the Knicks have been bad. They've never stood for anything in recent years. What are they? They're not good at really anything in particular. What is the foundation of the house? What is it? The Knicks have it. Play real defense. They're very coachable. You get maximum effort every night. That is not a championship team, but it's a 45-win team in the regular season, and that in the East can get you a 4 or 5 seed, and they are absolutely good enough to win a playoff series. They just lack offensive firepower. But, you know, it's funny. For all the glamour and the wealth and the Stars of New York. If you really go back to the history of New York Knicks basketball, and when I was a kid, the first time I started watching sports was like 1971, 1972. The two championships for the Knicks came in 1970 and 73, both against the Lakers with Jerry West. The Lakers were known as flashy and offensive. The Knicks were all about defense. Walt Frazier, still a broadcaster, was a seven-time All-NBA defender. They were about defense. And everybody always thinks New York is flashy. That's not about it. That's not what it's about. Even Syracuse basketball, the most popular college team in New York now, is about that zone defense that Boeheim plays. New Yorkers like their teams tough. The New York Giants Super Bowls have really never been about offense. They've been about defense. Joe Namath is one of the only, like, offensive-driven New York championship teams. And when you really look, I mean, Mariano Rivera, the closer. They don't win any of those World Series under Torrey without Mariano Rivera, the closer. And so New York's all flashy, but the Knicks won with defense over the flashier Lakers. Pat Riley's teams were all about defense, and this team is all about defense and effort. It just fits New York. I've said this before. It's not a coincidence that every great Laker team starts with offense. Wilt, Jerry West, Gail Goodrich, those teams won like 33 straight in the 70s at one point. Magic and Kareem, Shaq and Kobe. That's really what they're about. Last year was weird. It was kind of about defense and AD and Dwight Howard and JaVale McGee and size. It was such a weird Laker championship. But again, it was a pandemic year. It was a weird year. The Detroit Pistons, every time they've won, it's been about defense. You kind of mirror your city. And if you go back and look at Knicks basketball, it's always been defense and tough and effort and Anthony Mason and Charles Oakley and Walt Frazier. And that's what this team is. They're not that gifted. Derrick Rose is kind of reinventing himself. He played great yesterday. Julius Randle is a max effort guy, not flashy, shoots threes better than he used to, but in a mathematical driven league now where threes beat twos, Lakers bailed on him. Knicks said, okay, what else? We're not landing the stars we want. He's been great. They have R.J. Barrett. Reggie Bullock's a defender, plays hard. This is a classic Knicks team. They stand for something. They are something. They're good at something. What a joy to watch them play. Not a championship team. Don't go nuts. Don't reach and overpay Randall. Don't reach for a injury-riddled star. That's not what you are. You're not Brooklyn offensively. You're not. That's not what you are. Don't get silly. Don't be the Browns. Don't make a big reach and overpay. Your foundation is excellent. You play defense. You're well coached. You play hard. You're overachievers. And that is, frankly, in New York, been the recipe for winning championships. It's Willis Reed hobbling on the court. It's the Knicks tackling Michael Jordan. It's a fun watch. They're not pretty. They're not glamorous. They're not that vertical, but it's a great watch. All right, I saw this yesterday. The Cleveland Browns will not be trying to trade for Aaron Rodgers. We love Baker. Okay, whether or not I agree with that, there is a point here. Is that Aaron Rodgers, as great as he is not for everybody. And he's not. And that's important to think about. I don't think he fits with the culture of the Colts. It's very much a team. I think he would actually be a step back for Andy Reid. I think Mahomes is more coachable. There's this thing about Aaron Rodgers. It's always been the stat that all the cheese hats can't really argue with. Aaron's a Baylor. He's not a foxhole guy. He's just gifted. One of the things about Russell Wilson and Tom Brady, they're optimistic to the point of being corny. Tom Brady trails the Super Bowl 28-3 and wins. He trails that Seahawk team by 10 in the fourth quarter and wins. Tom Brady has 39 fourth quarter comeback wins in his career. And what makes that number amazing is how often did he even trail in the fourth quarter? They average 12, 13 games a year. Aaron has 17 fourth quarter wins. Oh, Colin, that's because they don't trail much. Either does Russell Wilson and he's got 35% more than Aaron. Joe Flacco has more than Aaron. Andy Dalton has more than Aaron. Derek Carr has more than Aaron. Matt Stafford has more than Aaron. Matt Ryan has more than Aaron. Aaron is not a foxhole guy. He sours very quickly. One of the amazing things about being sort of optimistic, and it's funny, my ex-wife's very optimistic. And sometimes my daughter will go, you know, some mom is sometimes too optimistic. And I always say, as opposed to what? Cynical? Optimism over time wears better than cynical. And Brady and Russell Wilson border on corny. But last year, Tampa Bay lost 38-3 in week 9. That season could have been over. But it isn't with Tom, pom-pom Tommy, rah-rah Tommy, sun at the end of the tunnel Tommy. That's one of the great assets of Brady. It's not the biggest, not the strongest, not the fastest. He's got a will and a belief we'll get through it. It's also what makes Russell Wilson unique. And some of his teammates roll their eyes at him. That's not who Aaron is. Good God, you think Aaron in Green Bay is a weird fit. You think he gets frustrated with Green Bay. Cleveland, the first sign of dysfunction, he would be eye-rolling through the tunnel, is that Aaron is great, but he's not for everybody. You need stability. You need smart people. He sours on things quickly. And Baker Mayfield, for all my misgivings about him, right now, he's a good fit. He fits Cleveland. Overlooked, often mocked, a little small, not the most gifted, but a gamer, got some fight. You can back him into a corner. He'll come out swinging. That's kind of what Cleveland needs now. Aaron Rodgers is not for everybody. By the way, the Denver Aaron Rodgers rumors are heating up. Robert Saleh had an interesting weekend as head coach of the New York Jets. We'll talk about that as well.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Enjoy spa-like comfort. Navien tankless water heaters. Go to tanklessmadesimple.com, tanklessmadesimple.com. Navien, 15-year limited warranty. So the NFL Network, Jesse Palmer, reports this weekend, Denver remains the number one landing spot for Aaron Rodgers. One of the things to remember is Denver right now has the second most cap space in the NFL. So that's a real thing. You know, there's very few hopeless teams in the NFL. And by hopeless, I mean no shot at a playoffs. And a really, really low ceiling at best. Denver is one of those teams. I think there's five in the NFL that there's no chance of a playoff spot. The New York Jets, rookie head coach, rookie quarterback, worst roster easily in their division. Philadelphia Eagles, really question marks at coach, question marks at quarterback. And I think they're rebuilding much more than they'd like to admit. The Houston Texans, dysfunction everywhere. Detroit Lions. They've done a good job in the offseason to upgrade their offensive line. It may be the strength of the team, but they got a new coach, a new quarterback, learning a new system. They're just not really good. And then there's the Denver Broncos. And four out of those five teams don't have a good enough roster, or just have rookie this or rookie that, or they're just swimming in chaos. That is not the issue in Denver. Their roster's good enough to make the playoffs. It is. And their coach is, on the defensive side, strongly respected. And it's not an organization that really swims in chaos. It's just not. It's generally been the Steelers with a mountain range. I mean, Denver's well-run historically. John Elway struggled at GM, but they're well-run. To me, it's May. It's early. It's May. You got time and you got cap space. Go for it. Denver had two big issues this offseason. Secondary, awful, and quarterback, question marks. Well, they've answered the secondary. Nobody in the NFL did a better job than to solve their secondary issue than Denver, except Cleveland. Cleveland did the best job. But they went and got in Denver Patrick Surtain, great corner, number one rated corner, number one or two at Alabama, and Kyle Fuller, a very high-end corner from Chicago. Still can't figure out why Chicago couldn't make that work on the books. So they're not going to be a good team at corner. Their only other question was quarterback. They got cap space. They have time. They have a good enough roster. As Jay Glazer says, when you're driving to your facility and you know you're not a playoff team, GMing and coaching in the NFL, it's a miserable, miserable experience. And I contend Denver, and Aaron doesn't fit everywhere. He would work here. He's got respect for Elway. Peyton Manning had that. I mean, Elway cut Peyton Manning's salary. Peyton Manning didn't like about it, but he didn't criticize it publicly because Elway's an all-timer. And Elway is better than Aaron Rodgers all-time in, you know, the history of football, and Aaron knows it. And because Peyton Manning won a Super Bowl, Aaron knows that. Aaron would have to be on his best behavior for Aaron. And I think he could be. 2 or 3 years, give it a run. But this one works to me on so many fronts. This is not a chaotic organization. It's a good enough roster, and their only weakness is quarterback. Alex for the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
Well, Zion Williamson is out indefinitely with a fractured left ring finger he sustained last Tuesday versus the Warriors. And this is an injury which Pelicans Vice President David Griffin thinks could have been avoided.
He's injured now because of the open season that there's been on Zion Williamson in the paint. He has been absolutely mauled in the paint on a regular basis, to the point that other players have said to him, I'm going to keep doing this to you, because they don't call it. So there is more violence encouraged in the paint against Zion Williamson than any player I've seen since Shaq.
You know, it's actually, you could say it's complaining, but if you watch Zion play, and when I catch Pelican games,
yeah,
some of it is Zion is so big and creates so much contact himself, you can't call a foul on every play. Some of it's just that. There's a Karl Malone thing. You could have had Karl Malone shooting 22 free throws a night. You could have James Harden doing that. So when players create contact, some of it just doesn't get called. Shaq was like that. But I would say this, is that the downside to being Shaq or Zion, when you're that strong, when you do hit them, they don't budge. They're really hard to officiate. Zion is hard.
Different kind of player.
Yeah, and he's leaning in. So it's one of those. I don't think these complaints shouldn't go unheeded. Like, this is a real complaint.
Yeah.
It was a complaint for years by Phil Jackson against Shaq. He was so enormous that a lot of the body blows that would knock over or lean a player, you just don't call. And I find there are certain players in the NBA that are harder to officiate. I thought LeBron James early in his career, he was, because LeBron didn't trust his jumper early in his career, so he drove to the basket a lot. It was hard to really officiate LeBron because he got hit and he was so durable and strong and forceful, you couldn't really tell that he got hit.
So the league actually fined Griffin $50,000 for this comment right here. The league didn't like it. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, that's what they do. They have to protect the fabric of their league. But I don't think David's wrong.
No, not at all.
I think Zion right now is the hardest guy in the league to officiate. I thought Shaq was. I thought early LeBron was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, listen, there was the old joke. If Michael missed a mid-range jumper, then he had to have been fouled.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like, Michael complained a lot about it, too. But, you know, at 16 feet, if Michael pulled up and he didn't hit it, he would complain, and the feeling was he probably was fouled because he shoots about 75% in those mid-rangers.
And this is a big hit for the Pelicans. They're currently in 11th in the West. They're fighting for that play-in spot. It's unclear if Zion is actually going to make it back for the playoffs, if they make it in the playoffs. And these are the big guys that the NBA needs to be playing in the postseason if you want the viewership.
Yep.
So I think it hurts all around, but let's move on because Mike Holmgren won a Super Bowl with the Packers, so he knows a thing or two about the organization, and he is not impressed with the way that Green Bay has been dealing with the Aaron Rodgers situation.
They didn't handle it very well, I don't think. I can't imagine a relationship between the coach or management or whoever's making the decisions and a star quarterback like that getting to this point. I just can't imagine it. I wouldn't allow it. It wouldn't happen.
Well, I think it should have not gotten to this point.
Well, Mike's also a great communicator.
Yeah.
Holmgren was known as just, anybody could walk into Mike Holmgren's office. He was always very communicative. He was not a barker.
Yeah.
You know, some of these guys bark, you know, back in the 70s, 80s, 90s, they bark and guys don't want to go into their room, you know, their coaching office. Mike was a communicator, so it would never have gotten to this point.
He did say, though, that this is the second time the Packers have gone through something like this, and it was kind of the same thing that they did with Brett Favre when they drafted Aaron Rodgers, and he believes they should have just kind of talked it out before it got to this point, smoothed it out. I mean, they're almost to the point of no return with everything that we keep hearing back and forth.
Yeah, I mean, if you're some people, Favre and Rodgers are a little more difficult to coach.
Yeah.
Just talk to them.
Talk to them.
Keep them in the loop.
Yeah, it's the MVP. Do whatever you can to keep them there. We'll see how that plays out. Well, Seahawks wide receiver DK Metcalf participated in the USA Track and Field Golden Games yesterday, where he ran the 100-meter dash. Metcalf, who is 6'4", 235 pounds, is known for being one of the fastest players in the NFL, but that wasn't enough to keep up with the sprinters. Metcalf finished in a 10.36 seconds, but came in last place. If he would have finished a sub 10.05 seconds, he would have qualified for the Olympic trials next month. Metcalf said he felt blessed just to be able to test his speed against the world-class athletes.
He's so much bigger.
He's huge.
Especially in the chest and shoulders. He is, if you had to guess, who plays football?
Who plays football? who plays another sport just
and I don't think
out of that group?
Tyreek Hill, I think, is actually faster than DK Metcalf. And I wonder, I don't think he's a track athlete. There's guys in the NFL that actually were track guys and football guys. I don't think DK was ever a track guy. He's just a football guy who was fast.
Yeah, Patrick Mahomes actually tweeted that. He tipped his hat, and then he said, Cheetah, you next?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Tyreek Hill's actually, I don't know if Tyreek was ever a track guy, but I think he's actually faster than DK Metcalf.
Gonna be fun.
Alex with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News.
All right, there's a lot of stuff to unpack over the weekend. Albert Breer is one of our information guys joining us now. Brought to you by Mercedes-Benz, the best or nothing. Albert from Monday Morning Quarterback. You know, I was saying the Cleveland Browns came out and said, we're not going to get Aaron, we're going to keep Baker. And I think Baker's got that kind of overlooked mentality, that street fighter quality that's perfect for kind of the, you know, what the Browns are now. But I was saying, Albert, that Aaron is not for everybody. He's not. There, you know, right. When you get him, you know, this is what Eric Mangini had said when they went out and got Favre. He said, we're not built for Favre right now. Favre in New York, we're this young rebuilding team.
Right.
I do think Aaron fits Denver, and one of the reasons, Elway's in the building, and Peyton Manning went there and won a Super Bowl. So there's a sense that, hey, we've done this before and it's worked. I think that helps Denver a little if they went and got Aaron. Your thoughts?
Yeah, you know, I think it's sort of similar to Brady and the Bucs, and I think you're right when you look at the fact that there could be a limited market for Aaron Rodgers. There were only two teams that were bidding on Tom Brady at the end. It was the Bucs and the Chargers. And I think it takes, you know, more than just the infrastructure around the quarterback to make it attractive to that quarterback. It's also the willingness to go all in, because he's not going to want to go there unless you're willing to put yourself on a 2 or a 3 year timeline and start mortgaging contracts and doing all the things that Tampa did to make the situation as good as it was for Tom Brady last year. And so, you know, I think that's part of what Andrew Berry's getting at. And, you know, Kevin Stefanski would be getting at with the Browns, where they would sort of have to blow up the way that they built the Browns so methodically and go with the model that the Bucs have employed with Tom Brady. Now, in the Broncos circumstance, if you do that, you got an older head coach, you got a first-year GM who's coming in and could do this kind of on a short timeline. That would buy him some time if he wanted in the short term to then rebuild after that. And then you look at the roster. I mean, Mike Munchak came in and really fixed that offensive line last year. There were serious holes there. And by the end of the year, they were one of the better offensive lines in football.
Yeah.
And then you look at the skill talent, Colin. Jerry Jeudy, Cortland Sutton, KJ Hamler, Noah Fant. All these guys who are ascending, who might be able to take the next step the same way, say, a Chris Godwin took when he got with Tom Brady.
By the way, very good point in their offensive line, because left tackle was seen as a huge liability. Yep. And by the end of the year, you had a Pro Bowler at left tackle. So that's a very good point. You know, I read a story this morning. It was an anonymously sourced, which generally gives you a juicier. People are willing to say stuff without being sourced or quoted. That Aaron, you got to clean the front office for Green Bay. It's he's burrowed in, he's embedded. You got to move some people. Just kind of your take on when you read or hear stuff like that, valid or not.
I think there's a communication problem. Yeah, I think that's really what it boils down to. And yeah, I think Aaron Rodgers wants the thing built around him again, the same way the Bucs are built around Brady. And I think this had an impact on a lot of quarterbacks, by the way, Colin. Like, I think there's almost like a LeBron effect going on in the NFL right now, where there's one thing for Brady to do what he did and go to Tampa. It's another thing when it works. And it really did work. And so I think part of this for Aaron is looking what he's up against and wanting the Packers to be ultra aggressive and trying to build a winner around him the same way Tampa has done that for Brady. But I do think that the root of all of this, you know, goes back to drafting Jordan Love last year. And I think what made that, I think, particularly a problem for the Packers is the fact that the communication wasn't great leading up to it. They actually called Aaron Rodgers while they were on the clock and about to take Jordan Love. And I actually think like the difference in making that call two or three days ahead of time and saying, look, just a heads up here, we really like the Utah State quarterback, we may go up and get him, would have made a world of difference. But the fact that he had to find out the way he found out, I think really put their relationship in a different place. You know, and then they get all the way to the end and they're there in the championship game. And, you know, I think he sees the way that Tampa's treated Brady and how aggressive, again, the Chiefs have been building around Mahomes and the Bills have been building around Josh Allen. And I think he's saying, I've accomplished a lot. I'm the MVP of the league. I want my team to treat me the way those three teams treat their quarterbacks. And again, it's the way the Packers have done it forever. It's worked for them forever. But I do think the communication issue is one of the things that's at play here.
Two other things. I want to address this. The Patriots. I think they acknowledged this offseason by going big into free agency. They had just missed and on a lot of offensive skill people, and they're not particularly deft at it. Your feeling on if anything changed. I'd been told by two sources through the years that in mid-January, Bill sort of called off the scouts and just said, I'll take it from here. That's what I'd been told by people I trust. And then Bill came out. There was an acknowledgement somewhere, maybe you broke the story, that Bill went against his scouts on wide receiver N'Keal Harry. And it came out that he's like, no, no, no. And they're like, no, no, Bill, that's not where we should go. Have they kind of moved the chess pieces? Is Bill acknowledging he needs help in that regard?
Yeah, and I think he really got that message when people started leaving the building. There were a bunch of scouts that let their contracts expire and left because they didn't feel like their input was valued. They didn't feel like they were a big part of the draft process, and they wanted to go to a place for a career development reasons where they would be able to be more involved in the draft process. And N'Keal Harry, I think, was a flashpoint for a few different reasons. Number one, it kind of played into all the things that were going on and the things that Bill had been internally, I think, kind of criticized for, which were he just puts too much value in his coaching relationships. He's very close to the old Arizona State coach, Todd Graham. And then he puts value in his own experience over the experience of others. N'Keal Harry came in and crushed his 30 visit in Foxborough. And despite warning signs that were put up by his scouts, he blew through them because he had a good experience personally with the guy in a single day. And so, you know, I think part of what's happened in Foxborough over the last few months has been an acknowledgement that the way that they were doing it the last few years didn't work and that it cost them some quality people along the way. And so my understanding is Dave Ziegler, who's sort of the new Nick Caserio there, and Elliot Wolf, Ron Wolf's son, have spearheaded a reworking of the scouting process. Bill has been in the building a lot more over the last month rather than being out in the road. And, you know, I think the idea is we want to have a more collaborative process in the building, and we need to reshape the way we do some of these things. And one of the things that I know other teams had noticed about the Patriots and the way they handled this year's draft, if you look at their draft class up and down, there was always a Belichick curveball in the past. Guys like Jordan Richards and Taven Wilson that were way overdrafted. This year, if you look at their class, all highly productive college players who were drafted right about where the league expected them to be drafted. And I think that is a sign of where things have gone. I think that Bill is putting a lot more trust in his scouts this year. Part of it's that you have to because of the COVID restrictions on how much coaches can do on the road. But I do think that there's a change that's happened there. And if it works, I would expect it to be permanent.
Finally, the Jimmy G situation's interesting in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
So generally, there is a feeling, most people don't think Aaron Rodgers would be traded in season. I do think Miami Giants are interesting. If those coaching staff lose faith in Daniel Jones or Tua by the end of October and say, we got the roster, we got the wrong quarterback, I think they could do it. But Jimmy G is interesting. They already won the trade for Jimmy G. They gave away nothing. They got to a Super Bowl. But if Jimmy G is 6-2 through 7 or 8 weeks, right, and Trey Lance is sitting there, do you think there's any chance that they would move off Jimmy G and say, listen, we're good. Trey's better than we thought early, and we can still get value for Jimmy G? Because you know by week 7, there's going to be 4 teams desperate for a quarterback. Washington could be one. Your thoughts on Jimmy G? Is he just here until the wheels fall off, or could there be a move with him?
I think it's the second part of what you said. I think it's completely dependent on how Trey Lance comes along. And I think if you look at the way that this thing's played out, like, you know, Mac Jones potentially being the third overall pick, I think gave the Niners an idea, okay, maybe we could move Jimmy G if Mac Jones comes in here over those first 6-8 weeks in the building and just crushes it and looks ready. You know, Trey Lance was widely seen as a bigger project. He hasn't played football in almost a year outside of that one game. You hadn't seen him in a lot of critical situations at North Dakota State because North Dakota State rolled over everybody. You didn't see him playing from behind a lot. You didn't see him in third and long a lot. And so, you know, there's at least this perception across the league that he's going to need some time to develop. They'll put him on the field when he's ready. But, you know, until then, Jimmy G is going to be the guy. And I think Jimmy G is in a fantastic situation because there's a really good team around him. And Colin, I think a huge key to all of this, when Trey Lance gets on the field, when they're ready to move Jimmy Garoppolo, there's a lot of alphas in that locker room, guys like Trent Williams and Nick Bosa. Kyle Shanahan has to be able to sell whoever the quarterback is to that locker room because they believe that is a championship locker room. So it's not only going to be on Trey Lance to win over the coaching staff and show the coaching staff that he's ready, but he's also going to have to be sellable to a locker room that's full of a lot of very accomplished veterans. And so could it happen fast? Sure, it could happen fast. But Trey Lance has a lot of – I think there's just like a long way for him to go to get there. And again, maybe it happens faster than you think. And whenever it does happen, then I think you get the green light to trade Jimmy G.
Good stuff. Albert Breer, Monday Morning Quarterback. Thanks, guy. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Colin.
Bad news for the Clippers. Rears its head yesterday again. This is a 2-year problem, plus an interesting weekend for the Jets coach, Robert Saleh. That's coming up.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Hey, this is Jason McIntyre. Join me every weekday morning on my podcast, Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre. This isn't your typical sports pod pushing the same tired narratives down your throat every day. Straight Fire gives you honest opinions on all the biggest sports headlines, accurate stats to help you win big at the sportsbook, and all the best guests. Do yourself a favor and listen to Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
By the way, strangest thing this weekend I discovered, you can buy Bitcoin and all these cryptocurrencies,
yeah,
if you have PayPal. It's just right in your phone.
Yeah.
That seems dangerous to me.
Are you just getting into crypto or were you in early?
No, not in early. I'm a real estate market guy. I've been since the 80s. That's what I do. I'm not into cryptocurrency. I'm not against it. I think there'll be a point in America where cryptocurrency works. I don't know if it's now. It's a roller coaster.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you can buy a house with Bitcoin. There's a couple players taking their full salary in Bitcoin.
Yeah, I wouldn't. But hey, to each their own.
It's a risk.
Depends on who you talk to. So yesterday we started the show talking about how impressive the Knicks were. The Clippers actually have a better roster with more good players. Kawhi Leonard's much better than anybody on the Knicks. Paul George is more offensively gifted than anybody on the Knicks. But the Knicks beat them. And one of the reasons they beat them is the Clippers are awful late in games. They're terrible. Paul George can get tentative. You know, they don't have, you know, outside of Kawhi, another score after Paul George you can depend on for 25 a night. But if you look at their late game clutch statistics, and I'll put them on the screen here for our FS1 viewers, there are five teams in the NBA who are terrible in something called clutch points. That's the last 5 minutes of a game with a point differential of five or less. Four of the teams have no talent. The Cavs, the Magic, the Thunder, and the Rockets. Then there's a team with a bunch of talent, the Clippers, that's second worst in the league. What the hell's going on? It's not that hard to figure out. This is the issue when Kawhi and Leonard's your star. He doesn't talk. He's odd. He's nonverbal. By the way, who is second best in the NBA in clutch points? The Suns, because Chris Paul talks and yells and coaches and barks and screams. I never bought into this, you know, leadership is, walk softly, carry a big stick. You got to talk. That's why the Packers and Aaron Rodgers are in trouble. Talk. That's leadership is talking and communicating, not being a big, strong guy who's silent. When Kawhi is your star, you're bad if he's the culture setter. You're bad late in game. This is 2 years now. It's been a problem. How in God's name are they the second worst team in clutch points? Ty Lue's won a title. It's not him. They've got talent. The other four teams around them in the NBA stats are bad. This is Kawhi. You say, well, what about San Antonio and Toronto? Those cultures were set. He was icing on a very formidable cake. He is the cake with the Clippers, and he doesn't talk. He's nonverbal. He doesn't distribute. When you want, you got to give this team to Rondo with 5 minutes left. Paul George, very talented, but his history is he gets very tentative and tight late. Kawhi can drop a bucket, forget him leading. Just have him be what he is, a shot maker. That's what he is. But you look at the Clippers, they have top eight in the NBA bench scoring. Excellent bench. They've got a coach that's won a title. They have two stars. They've got a 3-and-D guy, Nicholas Batum. That's a championship team. They are ready to win. Microwave and win. And they're awful at the end of games. It makes no sense until you think of, well, who's running the team? By the way, the Suns are suddenly great at clutch scoring. Chris Paul's verbal. LeBron's teams have generally been good late. He's verbal. He's a coach on the floor. The Warrior teams have generally been very good late. Why? Steph Curry is verbal. It's not complicated stuff. Is that you cannot have this roster and be this bad late in games. You got to hand it over to Rondo. Let him do what he does. They call him Playoff Rondo for a reason. Last year, he was great for the Lakers in big spots. And he wasn't a necessity for the Lakers. He was an additive, a bonus. Because with LeBron, you had the leadership. But this is kind of what you get when your culture is set with Kawhi Leonard. And last year, what was the big issue with the Clippers? I got fooled on it. Chemistry. Again, chemistry is not a problem when your leader is a communicator. Chemistry is a problem when your general manager in Green Bay won't talk to your prickly quarterback. Then it's a problem. So watching the Clippers yesterday, I'm like, this roster's way too good to be this bad at the end of basketball games. It makes no sense. They are just easily disrupted. Now, again, the Knicks deserve credit. Knicks play real defense. Thibodeau's a great defensive coach. But if you look at the Knicks' talent, Julius Randle's a B-plus player having an A-plus year. Derrick Rose is not a vertical finisher like he used to be. He's a good off-the-bench guy. Reggie Bullock. I mean, when you really watch, I mean, this is a prime example when you watch these highlights. They just don't really have an identity late in games. Why would they? Why would they have an identity? That's not what, by the way, last year, if you look up reports, the biggest complaint was, well, Kawhi is getting special treatment and Paul George was getting special treatment. Again, that doesn't happen if guys talk. And you can't blame coaches. At some point, this has always been a players' league. Players have the power. The NFL is not a players' league. NBA is. So that means you make the money, coaches get fired, not stars. But then, when you're bad late in games, it falls on the player, not the coach. I'm tired of the coach getting whacked in the NBA. It's a players' league. You get the plaudits when you win late. You get the criticism when you lose late. This is not a Brad Stevens issue in Boston. They don't have enough juice. This is not a Ty Lue problem. Calling right, calling wrong next. Oh, I got 30 seconds. My bad. Misread the clock. I wanted to get to my Robert Saleh story, but now I don't have time. Let me read a quick spot and we'll be gone. Calling right, calling wrong, top of next hour. If you're still running your books on QuickBooks, then it's quicksand. Bigger you get, the faster you'll sink. Go to NetSuite. They're offering one-of-a-kind type financing. NetSuite.com/herd. NetSuite.com/HERD. Live in L.A., it's The Herd.